The trade deficit, will it be too hot, too cold, or just right?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. In about a half hour, we'll find out how big the U.S. trade deficit was in October. The expectation is that Americans didn't sell all that much more to foreign buyers in October, but we didn't buy that much more either. Marketplace's David Gura has the story from Washington.
At last check, the trade deficit got smaller. It shrank to $44 billion. I asked Robert Shapiro, a former Undersecretary of Commerce, if that's good news.
It's hard to call it good news because it mainly comes out of bad news.
He says there are essentially two ways the U.S. can reduce its trade deficit. It can produce more goods Americans want to buy.
The other is to go into a recession. A recession is the surest way to bring down a trade deficit because it sharply reduces the purchases of imports.
In other words, Americans are buying fewer goods from abroad, and yet other countries like Brazil and China weren't as hard hit by the recession and have continued to grow. Zach Pandel is an economist with Nomura Securities. He says our trade gap is a bit like Goldilocks's porridge.
In a growing economy, if the trade balance is roughly stable, that's actually a pretty good outcome.
If it had been too hot or too cold, the trade deficit could have been an obstacle to economic recovery. For the time being, it looks like it may be just right. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
To Europe now, where tougher rules could be announced as soon as today for banks across the continent. Marketplace's Stephen Beard joins us now from London with more. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy.
So what are the Europeans doing to go after the banks now?
Well, a European regulator is outlining plans today for a crackdown, which is Europe-wide, covering all 27 EU countries, including Britain. And the rules are likely to go much further than the British rules, which are already in place. The bankers are not going to be happy. The British regulator is planning to endorse the plan and impose it within days to head off the traditional Christmas bonus jamboree.
The bonus jamboree. And how big of a cap on bonuses are we talking about?
We don't know yet, but most controversially, it's likely that there'll be a plan to limit the overall size of the bonus to a ratio with the basic salary. So the days of the bankers pocketing bonuses 50 times the size of their basic salaries could be numbered in Europe.
And what are the banks saying about this, Stephen?
Well, they're not happy. And it's not just the bankers. Stuart Fraser, a spokesman for the whole London Financial District, told me he's concerned because these rules will only apply in Europe.
We will be at a competitive disadvantage, and over a period of time, international banking operations will gravitate more towards more favourable environments.
But the curbs will almost certainly be imposed. Public anger is against bankers is unabated here, especially in Ireland, where opposition parties are calling for a 99% tax on bankers' bonuses.
That is a high tax. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, have a good weekend.
And you, Jeremy.
And let's do the numbers. Markets are mixed right now. Stocks are down in Asia, up in Europe. Here's a number for you. 2. As of tomorrow, that's how many years it's been since Bernie Madoff was arrested for his Ponzi scheme. So far, only a fraction of the money has been retrieved for investors, and the cutoff for new lawsuits is next week. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 2 points to close at 11,370.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. By Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in natural gas, nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies. And by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio.
At the Nobel Prize ceremony in Oslo, Norway today, dignitaries clapped for an empty chair. They were honoring this year's Peace Prize winner, a democracy activist who remains behind bars in China. The Nobel Prize is the subject of today's globalist quiz, and we're focusing on the developing nations called the BRIC, as in Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Stefan Richter is our quiz master, and he joins us now. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Jeremy. Ready for today's quiz?
I am ready.
All right, so here's the question. How many Chinese citizens have won a Nobel Prize since these prizes were first awarded all the way back in 1901, so for well over a century? Your options are no Chinese, that's A, three Chinese, that's B, four Chinese have won Nobel Prizes, C, or D, 20 Chinese. Which one is it?
Well, I don't think it's going to be the low or the high end of that, 0 or 20, so I'm going to go with 3 Chinese.
What a wise man you are. Bingo, right on. In addition to Liu Xiaobo, the current Nobel Prize laureate for peace, there were two who got it together in 1957 for physics, and so that makes for a total of 3. Or 4 is, if you count the Dalai Lama, who got the Peace Prize in 1989. But, of course, that would not be welcome news by the Chinese.
No, indeed. All right. And who's 20, Stefan?
Well, this is a quiz about the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and the Nobels that these countries have won. And do you have a guess which of these countries has done most over the last 100 years in terms of science, education, literature, history, universities?
Well, I feel like Brazil and India are the more developing of those three, and that Russia has been sort of developed for longer. So I will go with Russia on the 20.
Exactly right. The Russians have had 20. So the Russians take the cake on Nobel Prizes, but Brazil and India, of course, will say we rather take our GDP growth rates than Nobel Prizes, because that overall is a little better, and they'd be right to say so.
Exactly. Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief at The Globalist. You can find out more about the world at theglobalist.com. They've got new features all the time. Stefan, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Talk to you next time.
And finally, someone got caught carrying out the idea we've all had. A man in Seattle was driving in the carpool lane with a passenger, or at least it looked that way. He took his kid's stuffed doll from the Nickelodeon show Go Diego Go and strapped it into the passenger seat. The officer who pulled him over said he noticed something was up because of Diego's huge, unblinking eyes. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Iowa lawmakers are debating a cut in funding for sabbaticals to help balance the state budget. It may be a win for the Hawkeye state, but will the universities be the losers?
The first sabbatical that I took in Switzerland probably led directly to what's now, you know, over $100 million in research funding.
I'm Tess Vigeland, putting a dollar value on the sabbatical, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.